Now, good.
Oh, I forgot what time it was, so it's 00 over there, but it's 4:15, so I have like 40 minutes or so?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is the other side of your handout, and the point is, well, ignore the abstract. Again, the handouts were prepared for different talks, but the point is, I want to try to evaluate the associated gradient that was defined before, but because it came from another talk, I'm actually going to compute the associated gradient of a slightly different space. Okay? You know, sorry, this is a part of this informal nature of this sequence, okay? So, maybe I'll start with a riddle, and I think I asked this riddle already a month ago, but I'll ask it again. So, you know, in algebraic topology, people often talk about R1 of a topological space, which is the collection of all maps from S1 with a base point into that topological space, modulo homotopy or whatever. And they talk about π2 of a topological space, and it's a group, and π2 is also a group. And again, it's the collection of all maps from S2 into this topological space, again, modulo homotopy. And they never talk about πt of a topological space, which is the collection of all maps from a tube to a to that topological space, which map, my condition will be that you map the lower ring into the base point and the upper ring into the base point. You see, a map of this space, πt, is again a group, because if you have two such maps, you can clearly concatenate them, and you get a different group. So why is and you get a group? So why is this group never discussed in topology? Okay, and the answer is that well, it's never discussed because it's a function of the other two. So you can find out that πt is equal to π1 semi-direct product π2. Remember, π1 acts on π2, and therefore you can write this semi-direct product, and you can show that πt is the semi-direct product of these two. So if you fully understand π1, and you fully understand π2, and you fully understand the action of π1 on π2, you've anyway understood πt. Okay? But the moral for me is that, you see, in the previous hour, I was talking about the knotting of tubes, essentially. But the moral for me is that it is sufficient to talk about the knotting, so I've switched from maps modulo homotopy to embeddings modulo isotopy, but the same moral holds. And the moral is that it's enough to talk about embeddings of circles, so ordinary knots in some sense, and embeddings of based spheres. And hence, I am switching to a different topological setting. Okay? And so the different topological setting is the set of ribbon embeddings of things that look like a bunch of balloons connected to a base point. So alternatively, you could think of it as if the balloon has a long neck that connects to the base point, and in fact, the fact that the neck is long is irrelevant. Okay? So really, these are base balloons knotted in R4, a collection of them, along with a collection of based hoops. So one-dimensional circles in R4, and uh, And I claim that this space has in it the exact amount that contains in it all the information that existed, that was in the previous lecture. Okay? So at some point I might want to justify it, but at the moment this is the space I'm studying now. Okay? And then what I want to argue is that there should be an invariant take from this space, taking values in a certain space of, in the Frilly algebra generated by the list of balloons raised to the power, the list of hoops, cross the set of cyclic words in the alphabet T. Okay? So I'm not constructing the, or in fact I am constructing the invariant, but I sort of, I'm not computing it, but I do want to tell you why it is expected. Okay? So, now in more detail. First of all, the space KBH, again, has a two-dimensional representation using two-dimensional pictures. And here's what the pictures look like. So they have red pieces that look like strands that end in a cup. So there are two of them here, and they stand for balloons. And they have blue pieces that are simple circles. Okay? And there is only one in this picture, and it's labeled X. Okay? Now, such pictures represent four-dimensional things exactly the same way as in the previous hour. So the crossing represents a crossing of bands which can be inflated to a crossing of tubes. The cup or the bullet represents a cup, and the virtual crossing represents, well, like before. So, you know, each of these red things becomes a long tube which is capped at the end. And in fact, let's think of it as being squeezed to a point at the base point. So this is a sphere, a base sphere. And likewise, V is a base sphere. And for the blue lines I will simply interpret as, as very thin tubes. So a strand is simply a tube which is so thin that nothing can pass through it. Okay? So a blue line is never over anything in a picture like this. It always goes under, or virtually. Okay? So this would mean a blue line penetrating through a band. Okay? And this would mean a blue line going above a band. And when inflated to R4, you simply don't bother to inflate the blue lines. Okay? So they remain one-dimensional. Is it clear? Okay. Or maybe you inflate them, but you inflate them extremely little. Or, you know, another way to say it is that the blue lines are exactly the same as the red lines, but after inflating them, you puncture them. You puncture, you make a little hole, and then what remains is only sort of the skeleton, a strand that runs all along the blue line. Right? If you puncture a tube at one place, it's topologically equivalent to just a line that runs the length of it. Okay? So that's what blue means. So, in fact, sort of, it means that blue is never over, or alternatively, if you think as blue as a punctured red, then that's the same as saying that if blue is over anything, then it's the same as it is just to the side of that thing. Because it's punctured, you can pull stuff out. Okay? And then there is a list of relations, and it's exactly as before, I drew all the relations in purple to indicate that each purple line could be either red or blue, but with the additional convention that whenever blue goes over anything, it's like a punctured red. You can pull it out. You can.
Well,
is this clear? Okay. So that's the space of knots that I want to study. And again, maybe at some point, or if people ask, I could tell you that there is a topological description for this algebraically defined space. And it's a rather disturbing conjecture, or it's a conjecture that this algebraic description describes the topology, and it's rather disturbing that we don't know how to prove it yet. Okay? So, this is roughly the analog of Rademeister's theorem. So Rademeister's theorem says that knot theory in R3 has an algebraic description, but it's a theorem. The corresponding theorem in R4 is a conjecture.
So what is a conjecture exactly?
So the conjecture is that the set of all ribbon embeddings of things like this. So okay, you know what? Let me tell you what. Okay, the conjecture is any picture like this represents a knot in R4. The conjecture is that two such knots are equivalent in are isotopic in R4, not really a knot, but a knotted collection of balloons and hoops. So the conjecture is that two such KBHs, knotted balloons and hoops, are equivalent in R4 if and only if their two-dimensional presentations differ by a sequence of these moves. Okay, so I'm going to take this conjecture as a fact and pretend that it's true. But strictly speaking, everything that I will say is not about KBHs in R4 as topological gadgets, but rather about the algebraic thing, planar pictures, modular relations. Strictly speaking, I'm talking about planar pictures, modular relations.
See, another thing on the flip side of your handout, so there's also something like planar algebra generated by something modulo, some Rademeister. This is also zero.
Yes, so in fact, in the previous lecture, it was also a conjecture.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. However, I should say that there is a natural way to embed ordinary knot theory into this. And when you restrict your attention to the image of ordinary knot theory, then these relations are sufficient. So the restriction of everything that I will be telling you about to ordinary knot theory is actually rigorous. Okay, it does not depend on this conjecture. Anyway, so now let me define an expansion in this context. So, when I defined expansion in general, I said, you look at the ideal, the augmentation ideal, okay? And the augmentation ideal is the linear combinations in which the total sum of coefficients is equal to zero. It's generated by differences. And if you have a difference of two things, so if you have the formal difference of two knots, with the same number of components, and then you can get from one to the other by a number of crossing flips. And this is true in ordinary three-dimensional knot theory, and the analog of it in our context, and this is a theorem, this is not I'm not faking anything. The one conjecture that I stated, I admit it, okay? But the theorem is that the augmentation ideal is generated by differences in which you go from a real crossing to a virtual crossing. And this could mean either a real crossing of red over red or of red over blue. Okay? So the augmentation ideal is generated, or is the set of linear combinations of pictures like this in which you allow one additional type of crossing, but it has to appear exactly once. And these are circled crossings, which really stand for the difference of over minus virtual. So a picture that has a circled crossing is really a difference of two pictures in which the circled crossing is replaced by either over or virtual. And then likewise, you can show that the augmentation ideal raised to the power n is generated, is the set of linear combinations of pictures with at least n such semi-virtuals, or in fact precisely n, it's the same. Okay? And then, translated to this language, what we seek, or in fact just as before, what we seek is an expansion. So a map from KBH, so these planar pictures, into its associated gradient, which is this direct sum. Okay? And again, satisfying this universality property, which is exactly the same as in the previous slide. I think with one more star this time. I don't know why. Okay. So why? So one reason is, well, I call it just because, but basically, really it means that the knot theory becomes susceptible to inductive study. You can study it up to degree 7, and up to degree 7 it will be combinatorial, or finite combinatorial, so you could potentially learn more about knot theory from it. And I could be more specific, but not right now. Second point, so if you've seen finite type invariants, and at least some of you have seen finite type invariants, then consider KBH modulo I to the n plus 1. A linear function along KBH is just a knot invariant. To say that it is a linear function along the quotient is the same as saying that it vanishes on I to the n plus 1, which means that it vanishes on n plus 1 fold iterations of differences. And that's exactly the definition of finite type invariants. So the elements of the dual of KBH modulo in plus 1 are exactly finite type invariants, and sort of simple algebraic manipulation will tell you that constructing such a Z is exactly the same as constructing a universal finite type invariant. So constructing all finite type invariants at once. It's the same definition. And then the last statement is the same statement about Taylor expansions that I made before, so I'll skip it. Okay. But then there is reality. The reality is that figuring out what ABH is, so what is ABH? It's this associated gradient. So the reality is that figuring out what ABH is nearly impossible. Not nearly impossible. It's very hard to do directly. Okay? Because, well, it's just hard. I don't know. I could tell you why, but let's keep it. So what we will do is we will construct a candidate associated graded, call it A tilde. So A tilde will be a graded space that is our first guess for what A should be. And it should be a guess from above. So we will also construct a surjection from A tilde to A. And finally, instead of constructing an expansion with values into A, we will construct an expansion Z tilde with values into A tilde, with values in A tilde, satisfying the property U that is relevant for A tilde. And I'll tell you what it is. It's
the following. So consider the associated graded of Z tilde. Associated graded is a functor. It maps a filtered space to a filtered to a graded space, but it also maps morphisms between filtered spaces to morphisms between graded spaces. So the associated graded of Z tilde will be a map from the associated graded of KBH, which is ABH, to the associated graded of ABH, but ABH was graded, its associated graded is itself. So GR of Z tilde will be a map going that way. And the condition I want from Z tilde is that it will be a one-sided inverse of pi. Meaning, if you do pi and follow it, double slash means do this, then follow it by that. So, if you do pi and then follow it by grade z tilde, by GR z tilde, you should be getting the identity. Suppose you found such a z tilde, then, well, pi was surjective. We've just constructed a... It was born surjective, because a tilde was an approximation from above. We've just constructed a map going the other way, one-sided inverse, so pi is also injective. So pi is an isomorphism. So this is the same as that. And then the condition that z tilde was had this property that I wrote here becomes the condition that z is an expansion. So once we construct a candidate and a candidate expansion and a good expansion with values into the candidate, we've both proven that the candidate is the right thing, and we've construction and expansion into it. Okay? So that's the plan. The plan is to construct a candidate for A, and then construct an expansion with values in the candidate, where again, expansion means pi followed by graded GR z tilde is the identity, and it amounts to saying that if you have D in A tilde, which is of degree n, and you push it down to here, then z tilde on pi is equal to, or I should have said GR of z tilde on pi is, sorry, z tilde on pi is this. Okay, so after plan there should be action. So here is what I claim is the candidate. Then I have to explain why is it a good candidate. Okay, why is it, okay? So here's my candidate for a GR for GR of KBH. So it's the space of diagrams that look like the following. It has, they have T cut strands, but now these strands are just straight lines. Okay? And T is a set that corresponds to the balloons of the KBH. And H, blue arrows or blue strands, and again, H is a set in correspondence with the hoops of before. And then there are a number of arrows going from points on these strands to other points on these strands, and I regard such pictures as graphs, so combinatorially. So there are finite, so the degree of such a diagram, of such a picture, is the number of arrows, and since this is completely graph theoretic, in each degree, this is finite dimensional. Okay? Now, how are, oh, sorry, and I should have said that blue strands only receive arrowheads, they cannot have a tail on them, or alternatively, you also allow tails on the blue strands, but then you mod out by the relations that whenever you have a tail on the blue strand, it's equal to zero. Okay? So,
Next, so actually, then you model by some relations, but even before the relations, I want to tell you what the map pi is. So I should have a map pi going from the candidate associated graded to the honest associated graded. So it should be a map that maps pictures like this with n arrows to KBHs with n semi-virtual crossings. The map is very simple. You just map every arrow to a semi-virtual. Okay? What does it mean? And then you still have to, so each arrow becomes a semi-virtual, but then you connect the ends of the semi-virtual, of the semi-virtuals to each other, as was prescribed by the diagram. So let me give you an example, and I think one example will be enough to explain what pi is. Wait, is there any razor? Yes. Is it wet? What?
Move up.
Yeah, but the other one is sort of behind. It's farther from me. It will be hard to write on. Okay. So I'll just give an example. So here is one particular arrow diagram. Let me interpret it as a KBH with two semi-virtuals. So first of all, let me label the arcs here. So let me label them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is just for the purpose of the construction. It's not really important. Then I have one semi-virtual between that goes from this strand to that strand. So it will be interpreted as a semi-virtual crossing in which the if you check the orientations here, the overside corresponds to the tail and the underside corresponds to the head. So this should be a semi-virtual in which the 4-6 part of the strand goes over the 1-3 part of the strand. So meaning this should be labeled 4, this should be labeled 6, this should be labeled 1, this should be labeled 3. I should be keeping track of orientations, but I think I'm doing it right. Okay. Likewise, the second semi-virtual crossing is between 5-3 and 4-2. So I write it, and it goes from 5-3 to 4-2. So far it's in the abstract. Now I need to turn it into a KBH. So let's see. I should have said that the barons correspond to the point at infinity, to the base point. So the barons are 1 and 2. So 1 and 2 go to the base point. Then 3 should be connected to 3. So I connect 3 to 3. 4 should be connected to 4, so I connect 4 to 4. Ouch, I don't know what to do here. Let me talk about it later. So here's a point I should tell you about. And finally, 5 should be connected to a cup. Where is 5? Here. And 6 should be connected to a cup. And if I only told you what to do here, I got a KBH. What do I do here? The answer is it doesn't matter. Because I'm thinking of this as going into I squared modulo I cubed. It's already in I squared. It already has two semi-virtuals in it. The difference between making this an honest crossing or a virtual crossing is in I3. So if I think of this as a map into the associated graded, it just doesn't matter what I do in all the other places. Okay? Okay. So every diagram like this represent, well, so I just define the map path. Okay? Now, well, I define the projection, but it's still the wrong one. Because really I have to mod out by this space by some relations. Let me tell you what they are. They are the tails commute relation, which says that if you have two tails along a strand, you can flip their order. Second, the cap pull relation, which comes from pulling caps before, but it's the relation that if you have a head next to a cap, you get zero. The blue relation, which I already mentioned, two relations that are not imposed but are worth noting because they're not imposed. So you don't have a tail next to a bullet is equal to zero, and two heads do not commute. And then the most interesting relation is the four-term relation, which says that whenever you have a local configuration like this plus a local configuration like this, it's equal to a local configuration like this plus a local configuration like this. And what I really mean here is that these are pieces of red strands, or purple, which could mean either blue or red. So pieces of strand, and these pieces can be embedded inside a big diagram in any way you wish. Okay? So again, if you've seen the 4T relation for ordinary finite type invariants, this is the same. Now, why mod out by these relations? In other words, I have to convince you that the map pi that I've just defined actually respects these relations. So I have to convince you that it maps the 4T relation, for example, to zero. Okay, otherwise it's not well defined. But you see, if I don't mod out by these relations, I don't, it's the wrong candidate, so I will not be able to find the z tilde.
No,
so,
yeah. TC, it should not have minus.
What?
The first relation,
TC, no, no minus.
Why?
Because this is the relation, it's true as it is.
So it's not like a lead bracket, it's not.
No, no, it's not like it's a lead bracket. Well, you'll see how it's related to a Lie bracket in a minute. It's a Lie bracket in a commutative algebra. So it's AB equal BA. Okay? Okay. So so let's derive the 4T relation. Okay? So start from the Rademeister 3 relation written over here. We also mod out by Rademeister 3. It's one of the many relations that I modded out by. And then, you see, the semi-virtual was defined to be over minus virtual, but alternatively you can write an honest crossing is equal to virtual plus semi-virtual. Okay? So use this relation, or use this equality, in three places here and three places here. When you do it on the left, you get a sum of eight different pictures, right? Because each crossing becomes either a virtual or a semi-virtual. Okay? Where again, a semi-virtual is just a short notation for the difference. Okay? Over here you'll get eight diagrams as well. So you get eight pictures is equal to eight picture, and this is an equality in K, in the space of knots. A sum of eight pictures is equal to a different sum of eight pictures. But let's now look at this sum. Suppose the first summand will be the summand in which all three are replaced by a virtual. So this is virtual, 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 this is virtual. So you get, you know, all virtual is equal to all virtual, and if you look at the definition of KBH at some point here, we had this relation, that was one of the relations. This is VR, the virtual Rademeister 3. Okay? And again, it has a topological meaning, but ooh, what have I done? Da da da. Oh, sorry. Ah, I hit the wrong key. Yeah. So the term with all four virtual, with all three virtual, cancels. Likewise, you can check that the three terms in which you have one semi-virtual and two virtuals also cancel. So the three, you get three terms like this from here and three terms like that from here, and they cancel due to the relation called M before. Okay? And so what you're left with is that the three ways of putting two virtuals and one semi-virtual plus the one way of putting all of them as semi-virtuals is equal, well, doing it on the left is equal to doing it on the right. Now, this equality written here is an equality in K. But in fact, it's in the subset I2 of K, because every diagram here has at least two semi-virtuals. So it projects to an it is an equality in I2, and it projects to an equality in I2 modulo I3. But modulo I3, this is irrelevant. This is zero, so you can cancel it. So you get an equality, three things are equal to three things. But if you look at what this, now you write these three things using pi, as pi's of things. And you find that pi of the sum of these three things is equal to pi of the sum of these three things. So, in the domain space of pi, I could have modded out by this is equal to this. This is the so-called six-term relation. But within that six-term relation, two of the diagrams differ by a Thales commute relation, by a TC relation. I didn't derive TC. I only seek to derive the most interesting one. But the derivation of TC is even simpler. To derive the TC relation, you look at OC, which was a relation in KPH, and apply to it the exact same procedure, and it will give you right away the TC relation. So anyway, given that I've already modded out by TC, I can cancel these two, and I'm left with the 4T relation. Okay? Now, the way I said it, I got the 4T relation in I squared modulo I cubed. But each of these pictures could have had further n minus 2 arrows or semi-virtuals in other places, and so the same relation makes sense in In modulo In plus 1. Okay? Okay, so I'm done defining the candidate associated gradient, and I'm done deriving the relations. Now I need the candidate expansion. So here's the candidate expansion. Well, I have to give you a map from KBHs to arrow diagrams. The rule will be extremely simple. Wherever you see a virtual crossing, you do nothing. Wherever you see an honest crossing, you replace it by an exponential quiver of arrows. Quiver in the literal English sense. So, you know, a collection of a bug containing many, many arrows. So, in other words, every place you see a crossing, you replace it by an arrow, by an exponential of arrows, which means either no arrows, or one arrow, or two arrows with factor 1/2, or three arrows with factor 1/3, and so on. Okay? So, example, let's apply z tilde to one sample knot. So, oh my god, you'll find out that I don't know how to draw knots. Oh, I succeeded. let's apply z tilde to this knot. Well, you do nothing at the virtuals, and you put an exponential of arrows near each of the honest process. Going from... Oh, yeah, this should have been the opposite to make it interesting. But anyway, you put an exponential arrows like this. But now, interpret it combinatorially. So combinatorially, this is just a pair of capped strands with the balance connected to infinity, and then an exponential of arrows going this way, and another exponential of arrows going that way. At least it's in the right target space. The only thing I need to do is to convince you that that this respects the relations, that this is an invariant. Sorry, I need to do two things. I need to convince you that this is, that it satisfies property U, but that's always an exercise. Property U is always easy to prove. You have to show that the semi-virtual goes to the right thing. The semi-virtual goes to is itself an honest crossing minus a virtual crossing. The virtual crossing goes to nothing. The honest crossing goes to an exponential, so it's like e to the x minus 1. And that's something that starts with x. So it starts with a single arrow, and it's placed in the right place. So it satisfies property U. And the hard thing is to show that this is an invariant. To show that it's an invariant, the main thing you need to show is to show that it satisfies the Rademeister 3 relation. Well, when you look at Rademeister 3, it involves a product of three exponentials of arrows is equal to another product of three exponential of arrows. And when you look at how they are organized along the strands, you have to show that this product of exponentials, slash here means not a single arrow but an exponential of arrows, so you have to show that this product of exponentials is equal to this product of exponentials in the quotient space. But you see, these arrows commute with these arrows using the Taylor's commute relation. A product of e to the x with e to the y, where x and y commute, is e to the x plus y. So this can be rewritten as, using Taylor's commute, as an exponential of a sum of two arrows, where in one case, in both cases, the tail is here and the head is either here or here. That's just this thing. But then you see, the 4T relation says that this sum of two arrows commute with an arrow going this way. So their exponentials also commute. So you can slide this exponential down to the other side, and then you can, well, and then again using Taylor's commute, you get the right-hand side. So z tilde was well-defined. Okay? I think I'm running out of time. I have run out of time. In one word, so we've identified correctly the associated graded, and we've constructed an expansion, and it took zero effort. The hard work is later. Part of the hard work will be to show that this associated graded is also isomorphic to a picture, to a space in which you allow internal trivalent vertices, and that space is related to the algebras, and you know, another part of the hard work is to compute everything, and then the last bit of hard work would be to integrate trivalent vertices, to integrate those knotted trivalent vertices into the picture, so those pictures that looks like this, and this is where the real effort will go. Okay? I'll stop here.
Thank you very much.